Let's do it. Let's chase some checkers. Welcome in ESPN 102.5, the game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I am Chase McCabe. You know I'm the NASCAR guy. I've loved the sport since I was in diapers, and I'm excited to talk with you every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. You'll hear from some of the best drivers in the world, and we're not only going to talk NASCAR. I mean, we know how big of a deal racing is in this city. With the Music City Grand Prix coming this August, that's IndyCar. We're going to talk about that. And, of course, the Cup Series coming out to the Nashville Super Speedway in June. We're going to get into that. But this weekend, it's all about the Daytona 500. NASCAR does it backwards, and I love that. They kick off their season with their biggest race and then go from there. But that has been a tradition in that sport, and all fans love it and look forward to this weekend every year, and it's been fun. I watched the truck race last night, a lot of tore up race trucks after a couple of big ones, and just some, you know, strategy goes out the window at these plate tracks. So very excited. And what we're going to do, and we're going to be joined today by driver Chase Briscoe. He takes over the number 14 for Stuart Haas Racing for Clint Bowyer. Clint Bowyer goes into the Fox Sports booth. So we're going to talk to him as he runs for Rookie of the Year, and also Brad Keselowski. He's a Cup champion, but he's looking for his first ever Daytona 500 win, so he's going to join us as well, and we'll get the field set. And also remember Dale Earnhardt, 20 years after his passing on the last lap of the 2001 Daytona 500. But what I wanted to do to start is look at some of the storylines, and I use the phrase some of the because there are so many for this year that I wanted to just focus on some teams and drivers specifically. But you think about this. For this year, the schedule has been revamped. You have a ton of road courses that have made their way, including next week they're going to run the Daytona road course. So they've added that because they're not going to go out to Auto Club to California. They're not going to go to Fontana because of everything going on. So you have that. You have Indy shifting to the road course. You have Circuit of the Americas. You have Road America. That they have added. Plus, they're going to go back to Sonoma. They're going to go back to Watkins Glen, and they're going to go back to the Roval. So you have that you've added. Nashville is back on the schedule, which we are all very excited about, going to the Super Speedway. This schedule is going to look different. The drivers are excited about that. The fans are excited about that. So that is a storyline. It'll be the last season in the Gen 6 car before they move to the next-gen car with the Daytona 500 next season. So we'll be following that as the manufacturers reveal what their cars are going to look like. They do more testing. We'll see more and more of that new car. Plus, you have a ton of drivers that have moved around. Ross Chastain takes over the number 42 for Matt Kenseth and, of course, Kyle Larson, who we will get to. Eric Jones moves over to the 43, taking that ride over for Bubba Wallace. Corey LaJoie joining a second Spire Motorsports team. John Hunter Nemechek, he was in the Cup Series last year. Now he's running for Kyle Busch Motorsports in the Truck Series. And Daniel Suarez is driving for the new Trackhouse team that has some big funding. You know, there are new teams coming in, which is exciting because I think that's really good for the sport. So we're going to get to all of that, but let's talk about the old standard, Hendrick Motorsports. Hendrick Motorsports is having a youth movement because Jimmy Johnson, the seven-time champion, has retired. He's going to go run the road courses in IndyCar, so you'll see him in Nashville this August in IndyCar. So the question all last season when we found out that Jimmy was going to retire was, what's going to happen to the 48? Who's taking the 48? Now, I truly believe that the original plan was Kyle Larson, that Kyle Larson was going to move into that car. We obviously know what happened. He got fired from Chip Ganassi Racing. I'm going to get to that in more detail in a second. But I think when that happened and you had Ally, the sponsor, involved, you know, they wanted somebody that they could trust to represent their brand. And Alex Bowman made a lot of sense because Alex Bowman had experience of jumping into the driver's suit of, you know, a legend, the man. He replaced Dale Jr. in the 88 when Dale Jr. retired. Dale Jr., the most popular driver of all time. And did he have to grow into it? Sure he did. But then he won a couple races, including one last year. He finished sixth in the point standings last year. It's his seventh overall season this year in Cup. He has proven that he can take the pressure of driving a race car every week and trying to win for one of the best teams, but he can also take the pressure of taking over a car from a legendary driver. Now he's taking over for a seven-time champion. And guess what he did? He went and sat on the pole for the Daytona 500. I would say that's a pretty good start. I've talked to Alex several times. He's just an awesome guy, friendly, laid back. It doesn't seem to bother him. And at 28 years old, I that is impressive, because I don't know if I would have had that much calmness with that pressure if I was him at 28. So that's a part of Hendrick Motorsports, of watching the 48. How competitive can the 48 be? How many races will the 48 win? Because they haven't won in a few years. I mean, Jimmy Johnson was on this cold streak. So they are going to try their darndest with Greg Ives still as crew chief. I mean, this is basically the 88 team. They're going to try to get back to victory lane. The second one, William Byron, has a new crew chief, Rudy Fugel, who moves over from Kyle Busch Motorsports, where he's been in the truck series. He's won a bunch of races, won championships in his time as crew chief. William Byron broke through last year. He won at Daytona in the what used to be the July race, now September, the last race to get into the playoffs. He finally broke through, and I have always said about NASCAR drivers, and you saw it with Chase Elliott, when they finally get that first one, watch out, because a bunch of them are going to follow. I believe that is the case with William Byron. He had two good years with Chad Knaus as his crew chief, mentoring him. Knaus is now the VP of competition for Hendrick. I think William Byron is primed and ready to win even more, and he talked about Rick Hendrick and the teams overall and what it would mean for one of these Hendrick cars to win the Daytona 500.
Oh, it'd be huge. I mean, you know, we've won other events here, and you know, it'd be huge though to win the Daytona 500 for any of the four of us. So I feel like there's even more so this year, concentrated effort on that and making sure that, you know, we're helping each other, and we've just gotten better and better at that over the years. The dialogues, you know, continue to be open, and I feel like we're just going to continue to try to move that forward and try to get one of us in victory lane. So it's definitely our goal this year.
I would say watch out for William Byron this season. And here's the thing, outside of Larson, you know, these three in William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Alex Bowman, they've come up together. I mean, they've been teammates for a long time. And so this youth movement that we're talking about, you know, that certainly helps that they've known each other for a long time. Chase Elliott comes into this race as the defending Cup Series champion. We saw him at Phoenix. He won that race. He won the title. He's still very, very young, and he's already got a Cup championship under his belt. I would say that that's pretty impressive, and he popped off five wins last year in his best season. What does it mean to him chasing the 500 now, coming in as the champion?
Yeah, I mean, just looking forward to getting the season started. Obviously, the beginning of a very long road our season is. So an exciting week always. I feel like I always, when I get to Daytona, I'm excited and ready to get started. Like I said, it's a great week for our sport, big event, but also the first days of what is a very long season. And I think anybody that traveled this deal knows that. So long road ahead.
Chase Elliott, driver of the number 9 Napa Chevy. And listen, the question has been, what's going to change with him now? What's different? Nothing's different. He's going to go out there and win races. He's going to go out there and be competitive. One thing I saw out of him last year that I think led to a championship was, you know, he when he would lose a race before he finally broke through, it would bother him and it would hang with him and it would, but in a way that hindered him. Now he just gets pissed off. And that's what a driver needs to do. And so you saw it last year when he lost that race to Kyle Busch, when Kyle got into him and he flipped Kyle off. That was a change. That was a moment for him. That was a change for him. And that hunger and that desire and that, oh, okay, watch me. Watch what's next. I think led him to a championship. So now he's got one. He wants two. He wants three. I think it just makes him hungrier. That team's going to be fun to watch. It's very hard to win one championship in NASCAR now with the format. It's even harder to win back-to-back. But the 9 is certainly going to be in the mix for things. That leads us to the 5 car. The 88 is gone, and it goes back to the 5. And I mentioned Kyle Larson in the 48. It all ended up working out because Kyle Larson showed that when the pause happened, he ran 4 races for Chip Ganassi Racing. And during the pause, they were all running iRacing, all running virtual races. And Kyle Larson had been an avid racer for a long time on iRacing. And he got caught on tape using a racial slur, using a word that he had no business using. Got fired for it. His sponsors dropped him. He got kicked out of the sport. He got suspended. And a lot of people looked at him and said, he's done. He hadn't done, because there are certain people that if you mess up, if you've done enough, if you have enough skins on the wall, you can come out of it. I've been watching this Tiger Woods documentary. Tiger messed up a lot. But Tiger had done enough that he was afforded the opportunity to come out of it. I didn't know if Kyle Larson had that. But here comes Rick Hendrick, and he knew he had a driver opening. He's going to move Bowman to the 48. He knew it was going to be a challenge to get sponsors to want to attach themselves to Kyle Larson after everything. But Rick Hendrick is all about second chances and recognizes talent when he sees it. Kyle Larson is a very talented driver. His 6 wins in his Cup career, I think he should have more. I think he will have more. Kyle Larson talked about getting a second chance.
I feel extremely grateful. And, you know, because I really never thought that I would, you know, get another chance to race in NASCAR. And I kind of accepted that throughout the, you know, middle of last year, and kind of tried to shift my focus towards, you know, what's ahead in my new life of racing a bunch and driving up and down the road and stuff like that, and trying to figure out how that'll be with my family, my kids once they start school. I'm like I said, grateful for my opportunity that Mr. H has given me, and it's pretty unbelievable, and I'm very thankful, and I hope to do a good job for, you know, everybody at Hendrick Motorsports, all my sponsors, and you know, just do a good job on and off the track to really take advantage of this second chance that I probably, you know, may not have deserved.
And a lot of people don't get second chances. I believe him. I mean, of course you're going to get up there and say the right things, but you can look at a person, look them in the eye, you can hear the tone in their voice, and you know when they're sincere. I believe he's truly sorry for what happened and what he said, and he's learned from it. He had to learn the hard way, and he's going to come back better now. And quite frankly, he's in a better situation with Hendrick Motorsports. I think Kyle Larson is going to have a very good bounce back. And then the other one that I want to get to real fast, 2311 Racing. You hear that name and you go, if you've been under a rock, you have no idea what that means. 23, Michael Jordan, 11, Denny Hamlin. They have joined up and formed this race team. They hired Bubba Wallace to be their driver. Bubba Wallace, of course, made a lot of news last year. He's the only African-American driver in the Cup Series, and has helped change a lot of things in the sport, in a sport that hasn't always been looked at in the best light when it comes to racism. Bubba is a very talented driver. He's a very smart young man. I have enjoyed having him on this show as a podcast multiple times. And he is now in the best opportunity that he has ever gotten in his career. And he talked about that opportunity.
But no, I think this is big for me, like you said, being able to have Denny in your back pocket, you know, looking at the year he had come off of, you know, there's a lot of positive momentum for us. We have some really crucial meetings coming up this week. Before we get down there, and we'll continue to have that dialogue of what we expect, how to execute the right way and go about things the right way to put ourselves in a position to contend and compete for wins. So I'm excited about it. I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity. I don't know if I've said that enough, but this has been what I've been wanting for so long, to go out and try to prove a point, that, you know, hey, I belong, and we're going to go out and compete, contend, and become a household name on the racetrack.
Bubba Wallace driving for 2311 Racing. And the big thing for me, and I watched this in the duels, is this is the best equipment he's ever been in. And you can be as talented of a driver as anyone, but if you've never been in equipment like that, there is an adjustment, because he's able to do things in a race car that he's never been able to do. Quite frankly, Richard Petty Motorsports just didn't have the stuff. And he did what he could there. But I do believe that he can win races. Now it's up to him. And now he has to adjust and he has to learn. We won't play the clip. We got to get to Chase Briscoe. But he even said after the duel, I have a lot to learn. I made some mistakes tonight. I have a lot to learn. He was very hard on himself. And I appreciated that. Because now you have Denny Hamlin, who is a three-time Daytona 500 champion, will probably be a cup champion at some point. I'm surprised he isn't. You can learn from him. You have resources from Joe Gibbs Racing. You have the money of Michael Jordan. You have everything you've ever wanted. Now you got to do something with it. We will see how that turns out. So just some storylines I wanted to hit. When we come back, Chase Briscoe. He's a rookie. He took over the 14 car for Stuart Haas Racing. A very fun conversation with him. Coming up next here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe joined by Chase Briscoe. It's the Chase and Chase Show here today. Chase, how are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm great, because we got NASCAR and the 500 right around the corner, and I know that this is an exciting year for you as you make your way from the Xfinity Series after so much success into the Cup Series. What's kind of going through your mind as you get ready to run the Daytona 500 in a full Cup schedule for the first time?
Yeah, I'm just excited, you know, to get going to you know, really everybody keeps asking expectations and all these things, and until we get going, it's hard to really say. You know, I don't know where I'm going to stack up, or you know, what I need to go do to get better, and what the length of these races are going to feel like physically. So I'm just excited to finally get going so I can learn all those things and just really see where I do need to go get better, because all those guys at the Cup level are so good at what they do. You know, they're going to definitely humble me quite a bit. So I'm just excited for that part of it and the process that comes along with that. So I'm just ready to get going, and it all starts at the Daytona 500, like you said.
How much have, you know, you can always lean on guys that have been in the Cup Series for a while, and you have teammates that, of course, you can do that. But you also have the unique situation that your teammate Cole Custer, he just went through this. He just experienced all this last year as he goes into his second year, and he won, too. So how much have you leaned on him as somebody that just went through the process?
Yeah, quite a bit, truthfully. And that was something last year. Even I would talk to Cole quite a bit, just trying to figure out, you know, what's it like, you know, what's it like moving up? What, you know, what are the things I'm going to have to learn if I do get the opportunity? And, you know, like you said, I have a lot of great teammates, whether that's Harvick or Almirola and even Cole. You know, I'll probably use Cole, even though he's the least experienced guy out of that bunch, quite a bit, just because I feel like he's so relatable to me. You know, what I'm going to be going through this year is exactly what he went through last year. You know, just he's most recently out of the Xfinity car like I am. So, you know, to have guys like that in my corner is just going to be a huge, you know, help to me, I think. And, you know, I'll probably wear those guys out quite a bit. But, you know, that's my best opportunity to run good, is by talking to those guys as much as I can.
Now, last year was such a crazy year with COVID and the pause, and then the compacted schedule and running different days of the week. But you found a way to win nine races in the Xfinity Series. I know that had to be quite the accomplishment, not only for you personally, but your entire race team.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, last year there was, you know, so many, you know, easy excuses on why we didn't run good, you know, between COVID and no practice and, you know, just the challenges at the shop. But, you know, just a testament to the Stuart Haas, and it seems like every time they're thrown a challenge, they just rise to the occasion and figure out a way to make it happen and rise above all the other teams. And it was the same thing last year. You know, we just, with no practice, you know, it was really going to be hard to kind of show up at the racetrack week in and week out and be competitive. And, know, with the exception of maybe two races, I felt like we had a chance to win every week, and just shows how good those guys are. And it's going to be the same on the Cup side. So just having that experience, honestly, no practice last year will hopefully be huge this year, not only for me as a driver, but also the team.
Chase Briscoe here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 5 years ago, you were winning an ARCA Series championship. Now you're in the Cup Series. It's a fast sport, you know, pardon the pun, but it literally has been light speed for you getting to this point. Have you had time to kind of sit back and just think how quickly it's all gone and been able to enjoy it?
It's crazy, you know, to look back on. And I was just doing a media thing a little bit before this, and they kind of mentioned that same thing. And I started thinking, you know, in the beginning of 2016, I had four pavement races, I think, to my entire resume. And now 5 years later, being the Cup Series is just, it's crazy how fast it's went. You know, that ARCA deal literally just feels like yesterday, and it's just happened so fast. And I don't know if I am prepared for what's about to happen, but you know, I'm just excited for the opportunity. You know, how many people can say they get to drive in the Cup Series and let alone do it for their hero and in the car that they, you know, would have dreamed of getting to drive for. So it's pretty special. And just, you know, I want to stay here. I don't want to do it for 1 year and be done. And we have to go perform now. So it's going to be a whole nother challenge, but it's a challenge I'm certainly looking forward to.
You're taking over for a winning driver in Clint Bowyer, but that 14 car, that's the boss's car. That's Tony's car. So how much pressure, I guess it may be the wrong word, do you feel of living up to the expectations of what your boss did and of course Bowyer as well?
No, there's a ton of, you know, internal pressure. I think just driving that car, getting to drive Stuart Haas alone, there's a lot of pressure, but you know, driving that 14 car, like you said, that is the boss's car. That's Tony's car. You know, that's his baby in a sense. So there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And then just even, you know, the fans that come with the 14, there's a certain legacy and history that comes with that 14, you know, from AJ Foyt to Tony to Clint. You know, all those guys are winners, and I want to be a winner and add my name to that list. So there's definitely a lot of pressure that comes with that. And, you know, hopefully this is a car that I'm in for a long time. And you know, truthfully, I'm in one for, or hopefully I'm in the 14 for my entire career, because that would just be a dream come true moment. And just excited that Tony picked me, and very humbled, you know, to know that Tony picked me, for me to grow up such a diehard fan of Tony's. And, you know, that guy was my hero growing up. So to be able to drive his car is just very humbling.
I know with last year being so weird, were you in the shop when you found out that you were getting moved up, or was it a phone call? Where were you when you got the news?
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story. So Tony had called me, and I want to say in August or September, and, you know, called me one night, 10:30 at night, and it was super weird for him to be calling me in the first place, and then really for him to call me that late. And, you know, we just talked dirt racing and sprint cars for a little bit, and, you know, probably 15 minutes into that conversation, he said, let's talk business, and told me that the 14 car was essentially going to be mine. He just didn't know if it was going to be in 2021 or 2022. They were still trying to figure things out with Clint, but he didn't want me to go anywhere else. And, you know, fast forward 2 months later, it's on a Monday, and I want to say it was in October, and I get a phone call from our marketing guy, Stuart Haas, and says that Tony's going to send his plane down to North Carolina. We have to go up there Wednesday. It's a last-ditch effort to sell our sponsor, HighPoint.com, on going Cup racing or Xfinity racing. We didn't know what they were going to do, so he wanted me and my wife to get on the plane. My parents were going to drive up. They lived 45 minutes from Tony's hometown in Indiana. And we were all going to meet the High Point CEO and co-founder. And we go up there and, you know, we hang out the whole day. And, you know, I don't think anything of it. And actually Tuesday, I got a call from my Xfinity team saying there was a 14 Cup car with HighPoint.com all over it. And I told them, yeah, you know, Tony's just trying to, you know, show the High Point folks what the car would look like. And I didn't think anything of it. And Wednesday, we get up there and hang out all day, and, you know, we have dinner. And at the end of dinner, somehow the word Chance gets brought up. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, here it is. Tony's going to put them on the spot and see what they're going to do. And he starts going in a little bit longer and longer and says, at the end of the day, well, I want to tell you, you're going to get a chance to drive the 14 car this year. And, you know, he had hidden cameras everywhere and wanted my family to be there to, you know, have that moment with me, and just said, you only get told you're going to the Cup Series once. And I wanted you to be able to remember this day forever. And, you know, he just did it in such a class act way, you know, to have my family there and, you know, have the hidden cameras and all that, you know, planned out was something that he didn't have to do. And he did that. So it's pretty unbelievable that, you know, the guy you looked up to growing up, put that much effort into you, you know, getting told you're going to Cup.
That's amazing. That's an awesome story. And the fact that you'll have that forever and, you know, your family there, that's just, that's really cool. And you've been open about your family stuff and you and your wife and trying to have a family on your own. And so how was the balance of living life and going through those things and then also trying to get 9 wins and drive a race car?
Yeah, it was, you know, tough, you know, and truthfully, it's still tough. We're still going through battles trying to figure out what we have to do. And, you know, perfect example today, this wasn't a good day, you know, and as a husband, that's hard to see your wife go through those things and, you know, try to be there and support her through that because, you know, as a male, we don't understand those feelings that they're going through and, you know, all that. And it's definitely frustrating. It's hard to balance work and home life and all these things, but, you know, we managed to do it. And, you know, it's certainly not easy, and I'm sure it's not going to get easier. It's until, you know, we figure out what's going on and you know, what issues we're having. And, you know, until we have a baby, you know, it's going to be hard to cheer her up, I think. So it's hard to balance all those things. And I don't know if there is a perfect formula or not, but we're just trying to do the best that we can and, you know, try to just be there for each other and, you know, put that stuff, honestly, first before work and, you know, put work behind family. And it seems like it's worked so far.
Well, I can tell you this, you're a lot more mature at 26 than I was, and it wasn't that long ago. So best of luck to you, not only in the 500, but the rest of the year. And I think you're going to do some great things. So appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Chase Briscoe, driver of the number 14 Stuart Haas Racing Ford, scheduled to roll off 30th in the Daytona 500 tomorrow. A bright young man, and I think he has a very bright future in this sport. It's been fun watching him in a short amount of time, so look forward to seeing him in the Cup Series. We had a rookie, and now we go to a former Cup Series champion. When we come back here on Chasing Checkers, Brad Keselowski looking for his first Daytona 500 win. We'll talk to him next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nash. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe hanging out and saying hello to one of my favorites, Brad Keselowski, the driver of the number 2 Penske Ford, as they get ready to fire up the engines at Daytona. We've all been waiting for it, but Brad, good to talk to you. How's it going?
Terrific. Yeah, we're absolutely excited about the 500. It's a big, big race for us, and we want to go win it. We've got a great shot, and the season of NASCAR is ready to start.
It's so unique. You know, we just saw the Super Bowl. We just saw Tom Brady join, and I'll say it, he's joined Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt, Richard Petty is the 7-time club. It's a pretty pretty short list of people, but they end their season with their Super Bowl. You guys start your season with the Daytona 500, but I've always loved that. I think it's unique to the sport, and I know for you drivers, it's just that extra motivation to go out and win the biggest race.
Well, you know, us NASCAR guys, we do things backwards sometimes, Chase. And most sports start their season with preseason and kind of finish their season with the biggest game. We're kind of the opposite. We start it with our biggest race of the season. But that's okay. You know, it's still a huge race for us. It's still a huge opportunity. It's the mystique of the Daytona 500, the Great American Race. And, man, I can't tell you how much it would mean to me to win it. We've been so close and you know, all that other stuff, I don't really care about. I just want the trophy.
You're a champion. You've won the championship. And as you just said, you know, you've accomplished so much in your career. And I know the championship is always going to be a goal for a team each year. But is that really, when you're doing the checklist, that's got to be what it is for you, to go get that Daytona 500 trophy and then you go and chase another championship. Is that kind of your motivation?
Pretty much, yeah. You take it one at a time, because one of the beautiful things about the season being structured the way it is that you can do that. You can focus on the 500 and move on to the championship because of, you know, Daytona 500 at the start, championship obviously at the end. And so we try to leverage that as much as possible.
You finished second last year in the championship points. I've always been curious because, you know, you hear some people have the mentality of second's just the first loser, or however you want to put it. But does it hurt any more finishing second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth? Or is it all just, we didn't win, now we got to go be better?
You know, they say in the Olympics, the worst thing you can do is be silver. You know, if you're bronze, you're happy you medaled. If you're gold, you're happy you won. But silver is kind of like, yeah. I would say I agree with that. We were really close, and it just didn't happen. It's unfortunate. I feel like I left it all out there, and we'll try again.
The schedule is going to be different this year, and I know as a fan and somebody that's covered the sport for a while, I'm excited for that. You're coming to Nashville, going to race out at the Super Speedway, and that's going to be exciting. But for the drivers, how nice is it to know that things are going to be a little bit different for the first time in a long time?
Well, variety is the spice of life, and the NASCAR schedule is just that. It's got a lot of variety to it, and that's okay. You know, I think it's not necessarily better or worse. It's just different, and that's sometimes that's good for our sport to mix it up a little bit.
I saw you race out at the Nashville Super Speedway when you were racing for Junior Motorsports in that 88. What does this market in this city mean to you and mean to the sport of NASCAR?
Well, Nashville and NASCAR specifically have always had a deep connection. That kind of has waned a little bit over the last few years because we're not in the market as much as we used to be. Hopefully it'll come back because of this.
Yeah, and you know the fairgrounds, I don't know if you ever raced out there. There's still talk of possibly being out at the fairgrounds as well, of trying to have some racing there. Did you ever race out there at any point in your career?
No. I've been there for a few races, but I never drove.
Okay. I was just curious. And I forgot, too, you got your first Xfinity win out at Nashville. So
that's right. Yeah.
You got one of those guitars to hang on the wall.
Two of them.
Two of them. Yeah. That's right. Two of them. It's been 20 years since we lost Dale Earnhardt, and I know your relationship with Dale Jr. and having run for his team and just the connections there, but Earnhardt Sr.'s lasting legacy on this sport has been what? Just not even what he did on the track, but some of the stuff that he did off of it.
Off the track, you know, obviously he was able to create a brand that drew awareness to NASCAR. He gave NASCAR a tough guy persona and earned it, too, that I think we all kind of ride. And, you know, I think some of his business moves, strategies were pretty awesome as well. And great ideas for that, that he deserves a lot of credit for. Always being part of his legacy.
How much of the safety impact of, you know, the unfortunate death is untimely death, but how much of those safety impacts are still felt today because of, you know, where the cars are?
Oh, a bunch. You know, Dale's death was incredibly tragic. Ultimately, it probably saved a bunch more lives. You know, whether it's the head and neck restraint device that became mandatory afterwards, I would put that on the list along with the safer barriers that have saved multiple lives, probably myself being one of them. And we're thankful for NASCAR to not just let the tragic accident of Dale, you know, happen in vain, but to actually move and do things because of it.
As we get ready for Daytona, you guys will have the Busch Clash, and you'll be on the road course. And we saw that last year, that it was worked into the schedule because of COVID and moving things around. But how beneficial is it going to be to race on the road course and then after the Daytona 500 go back and have that as an actual points paying race?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good little warm up for us. The Clash has always been a warm up race this year as much as ever. You know, we did run on the road course last year, only for a little while in the summer, but still, this will be a great warm up race and hopefully we can go win it.
Coming up through the ranks, you know, I mentioned you running for Dale Jr. and the relationship with Hendrick Motorsports, Jimmy Johnson, the 7-time champion. It's going to be weird not seeing him inside the 48. Alex Bowman taking over that. Jimmy's going to go try and conquer IndyCar and their road courses. But how weird is it going to be for you not having Jimmy on the track?
Yeah, you know, every year brings about different changes. One day it'll be me that's not on the track. I know that. And, you know, everybody likes to think that the day when they're no longer there, whether it's on the racetrack or living in totality, that the world will miss them. And we certainly will miss Jimmy. But the world will also go on. And that's the harsh reality, whether we like it or not. And Jimmy left a huge mark on the sport, a lot of success. I'm happy for him and his family to get to do things that they want to do. He certainly earned that. and I wish him the best.
Last thing before I let you go, one of my favorite things about you is whenever you win a race, we see that American flag. Why does that mean so much to you to do the victory lap with the old, with Old Glory?
Well, it's a chance to reflect on the privileges we all share. Driving a race car is a privilege not a lot of people have. Watching a race is a privilege that not all people have. There's a lot of things going on in the world for good and bad right now, and I recognize how fortunate and privileged we are to get to do the things we get to do. It's a moment to celebrate it and reflect upon it. So it means a lot to me.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Brad, appreciate the time today. Best of luck in the Daytona 500. Watch out for the 11. He's been pretty good lately, but I think Team Penske's got a good shot this year.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Chase.
Hard to believe as long as he's been in the Cup Series, he's never won the Great American Race, but looks to do it for the first time. And we talked before the Clash and before the qualifying races, but you can just hear the excitement in his voice of getting there and getting ready to go. And I think that Team Penske, they always bring the horsepower, and I think that Brad is another one that, and again, you're going to hear me say, yeah, they have a good shot. They have a good shot, because that's how the Daytona 500 goes. Literally everyone in the field has a good shot, because you never know what's going to happen. He rolls off 24th, but it's going to be a crapshoot at times to try and win this race, because there's going to be a big one or big ones before it is all said and done. We will come back. We will give you my final analysis on this race, and we'll play a little Sunday Money. I will explain what that is. It's going to be a feature here on the show. Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in. Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game. If you miss any of today's show, you can find on wherever you get your podcast. Just search Chasing Checkers, rate, subscribe, and review. You can get the new episode right to your device or computer, however you listen to podcasts. It'll also be at thegamenashville.com if you miss anything. Appreciate Chase Briscoe and Brad Keselowski for joining the show. And what's funny is I was watching, obviously with these driver interviews, we taped those earlier in the week because of their schedule on the weekends. But the second practice was supposed to happen, and I think they ran about a lap, and then severe thunderstorms came through Daytona. I have the media center up right now on the NASCAR media site, and it is rainy in Daytona, but Brad Keselowski actually led that practice, even though it was a very short one. But Brad Keselowski, again, we'll be talking about him a little bit today, because I think good things are ahead for the two. So let's set the field for the Daytona 500 as they will roll off. Alex Bowman put the 48 car on the pole, his teammate William Byron on the outside pole, so the 48 and the 24 on the front row. However, there are several cars that are going to backups, which means they have to go to the back of the field after wrecks in the duels. And unfortunately, Brad Keselowski is one of those. Kaz Grala in the 16 is one of those. William Byron is one of those. Anthony Alfredo, Cole Custer, Ross Chastain, the other ones dropping to the back. Now, the other concern, and I just saw Bob Hockress of Fox Sports update this, it appeared in the duels that Alex Bowman was having some sort of engine issue. And if he changes motors, he's got to go to the back. They have not changed the motor as of yet, and Hockress is reporting that now they think it was something else, and it looks like they have it figured out, whatever it was. So he can keep his pole position, but his teammate William Byron will not be up there with him. The two dual winners, Eric Almirola in Duel 1, Austin Dillon in Duel 2, are third and fourth. And for those of you that are new to the sport, learning the sport, this is the only race in which they do these things. And for this year, with COVID protocols, they're not going to practice and qualify unless it's a place they haven't been to. And like the Bristol Dirt Race and things like that. But for this week, they qualify. They do traditional qualifying. The only positions that are set is the front row, and then they run the duels to set the rest of the field. And like you saw, Ty Dillon barely missed the 500 getting beat in the duels. So the top 10 for you, Bowman, Byron, and then third, Eric Almirola, Austin Dillon, Christopher Bell rounds out the top five. Bubba Wallace in the 23-11-23 rolls off six. Ryan Newman, who was in that horrific crash last year at the end of the Daytona 500, rolls off seventh. Kevin Harvick, eighth. Joey Logano, former champ, Harvick, two. Ninth. Kyle Busch, still looking for his first Daytona 500 in 10th. So there you go, the top 10 of the Daytona 500. 20 years ago, on February 18th, like many people, and I get personal with this, my hero died on the last lap of the Daytona 500. I grew up a Dale Earnhardt fan. I'm still a Dale Earnhardt fan. My fandom shifted to Dale Jr. when he came on the scene, even before his father passed away. I mean, I the Earnhardts, it's who I cheered for. And I remember I was about 13, and I sat in my mom's living room watching the race, cheering on the DEI cars and Dale. But I kept saying, Dale's sitting there third. Mikey's first, Junior second. Those are his cars, but Dale's going to get him. Dale's going to go up there and get him. He's in the perfect spot. He's going to slingshot around him. He's going to win the race. And that's not what happened. He held back, and he was throwing blocks and doing things that you wouldn't normally see Dale Earnhardt do, because he wanted his friend Michael Waltrip, who had never won a race in a very long career, 400-something starts and never won, and Dale Jr. And ultimately, he gets run into. They called it the hornet's nest. I mean, that's what was happening behind him. And we saw him hit the wall head on. And again, car goes down in the infield, and I think, all right, Dale's going to get out. He's going to be mad, but he'll go get him next week. He'll be happy his car has won. And unfortunately, that's not what happened. We found out a few hours later when Mike Helton, then the president, he's the chairman now, had to deliver the most difficult words I think that any race fan ever heard. And that was that Dale Earnhardt had died. I've watched a lot of the Dale Jr. Download leading into this year, talking about it with people, Michael Waltrip, Mike Helton, Darryl Waltrip, who was in the booth for Fox Sports. And it never hit me at the time when I was watching it. You know, even though multiple times you heard DW go, I hope Dale's okay. I hope Dale's okay. Is Dale okay? And watching Dale Jr. run down pit road, going to the care center. And Ryan McGee has done a great special that's going to air tomorrow at 11 o'clock our time on ESPN about the Intimidator 20 years later. And he does a sit-down with Dale Jr., and they showed a snippet of it this morning where he's talking about that he just knew. He locked eyes with Kenny Schrader, and he just knew that something was wrong. But the sport changed so much, and unfortunately, a lot of the, as Ryan McGee told us yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase, you can go listen to that on demand at thegamenashville.com, a lot of the things that were implemented after Dale Earnhardt's death were there. It was just they weren't enforced. And unfortunately, it took the 7-time champion losing his life for the sport to make the changes that they needed to make to be safer. And we've been very lucky since that day. Things have been a lot safer. Ryan Newman's crash last year would have had a totally different ending. And I thought, and even then, I thought it was going to have a bad ending. A lot of people did. And the fact that 2 days later he walked out of the hospital holding the hands of his little girls was pretty amazing. And that is Dale Earnhardt's lasting legacy. His longtime car owner and best friend Richard Childress reflected on Dale Earnhardt 20 years later.
Well, it's tough. You know, we were good friends. We hunted and fished and did a little bit of everything away from the track. And he would call me at night at home just right before, when you know, even when he was building his race teams, and he'd say, I know you're having that glass of wine. Let's talk a while. And just I miss those moments and so many things. But it's been tough, and not only tough on me, but on and the family. And I think the race fans, a lot of them haven't gotten over it yet. And I haven't got over the loss. You know, I think about it. There ain't many days it goes by that I don't remember something about Dale. And you walk in our museum up here and you look around, and it just brings back so many great moments that we had together. And 20 years later, it doesn't seem like it's been 20 years since we all lost Dale. And wow, man, what do you say? We all just missed him.
Yeah, and we all still miss him. It's amazing. He would have been 69 going into this race, and you know, probably well retired. But who knows? Dale Jr. probably never goes to Hendrick Motorsports. DEI is probably still competing. We'll never know, but his legacy will forever be felt, and you will hear it on this show. Our opening theme for the intro is called Sunday Money, and it was a song by Brooks and Dunn that was written about Dale Earnhardt, and we will use it for a feature as well to end every week where I give you the odds. Let's chase some Sunday Money. Sunday Money. The Daytona 500 is a tough one to pick. That is for sure. So what I'm going to do is, real quick, here are the... Denny Hamlin is the favorite at plus 700. These are from BetMGM. Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, plus 900. Ryan Blaney, plus 1100. I'm going to give you my three that I think are the best bets, a long shot, and then my pick. My three are as follows. Ryan Blaney, plus 1100. He's due. He's strong on plate tracks. I like him. Brad Keselowski, who you heard from earlier, looking for his first Daytona 500, plus 1,400. And William Byron, even though he's dropping to the back in a backup car, plus 1,800. He won there last September. I like his chances as well. And then the long shot at plus 5,000, Tyler Reddick. Had an impressive rookie season, and I think he's going to build off that. But my pick to win the Daytona 500 is Brad Keselowski. Believe he finally gets it done. He adds a Daytona 500 trophy to his trophy case. So there you go. There are the picks. And this is the first episode of Chasing Checkers. It's good to be back. We're going to be here every Saturday at 9 talking racing, having interviews, and giving you the picks to win on the weekend. I am Chase McCabe. Enjoy the race. We'll talk to you next Saturday at 9 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.